Charles Goyette, the weekly podcast. The date on today's podcast is August 15th. Now, for those who follow U.S. monetary policy carefully, August 15th is memorable as the day in 1971 that President Richard Nixon ended whatever tenuous link the U.S. dollar still had to gold. So we had gone in the course of a few decades from a real gold standard to a gold exchange standard after World War II, and that ended on this date 43 years ago. And since then, we've been on a dollar standard in which the dollar is backed by nothing whatsoever. And now, a few decades later, the dollar global standard is clearly breaking down. And so we thought it would be a good time to review some of this to help understand our monetary trajectory today. And in particular, Dr. Paul, because I've been told that the events of August 15th, 1971 may have been instrumental in moving you into politics.
Well, it certainly had an influence on me. It never, not necessarily into politics, but into political discussion, because I really never had set a goal to get into politics. But I know that the 60s were important to me because I was studying Austrian economics during that period of time, and there were many predictions that there would be a coming devaluation. Bretton Woods would fail. I read Henry Hazlitt, who really, and when the Bretton Woods was set up in 1945, he said it can't work and it's going to fail. So it was a strong confirmation of what was to be expected. But it is true that following that, I started speaking out more. So that was in 71. In 73, I thought, well, nobody wants to run as a Republican in Texas. There were very few Republicans. And nobody wanted to run in a Watergate year. So it was a real mess. So I just sort of stuck my name. The Republicans were glad to have me back then because it was just a name, especially in Texas. And the goal was to speak out, you know, about monetary policy with very little expectations that I would end up going to Congress. But it was a vehicle for me to at least have a small audience. And, of course, the audience remained small for a long time. And now monetary policy is a much bigger deal. There's a lot more people who know and understand a lot more about the Federal Reserve. And the worse our system gets, the more interest there is in the Federal Reserve. And certainly in these last few years with the Great Recession that's been going on, which is a depression for about half of the population, they're starting to realize how important the Fed is and what all these dates were. But that date I remember very well because it was a Sunday night. We were sort of anticipating, but it was sort of a major announcement, which back in those days when there were significant devaluations or news on monetary policy, it was usually done on a Sunday night when there'd be, you know, less news coverage of it, thinking it's going to slip by, but important events like this don't just slip back. But I think one of the things that I remember so clearly about this was I knew it was a great event. But even at that time, I had joined the Chamber of Commerce just to keep up with current events. And I was going to what they call a Legislative Action Committee, and they met every Monday at lunchtime. Although I was busy in my medical practice, this was sort of a little hobby that I had to be involved in other organizations and talk about these events. But to me, the meeting there was rather astounding because each Monday you get a report from the National Chamber of Commerce to give us marching orders, you know, what's going on, a report on legislation and this sort of thing. And this time, of course, we got the message and it was excitement about all this wonderful event from Richard Nixon. My goodness, what's going on here? They're supposed to be the business people. So here we have the president closing down the gold standard with an executive order without congressional input. And he puts on wage and price controls, which means that you are going to flip the economy into a socialist economy because you don't have a pricing structure. And also a 10% tariff on everything that was coming in. And the business community was excited. And then I thought, well, this is crazy. Well, the Chamber of Commerce must be wrong. But the next thing that amazed me that day is the stock market went up. It was less than 40 points, 35, 38 points in one day. Back then, it was historic because it went up more in one day than any previous time before. And I thought, wow, we have a lot of educating to do. But of course, the concerns I had were real because obviously the 70s turned out to be a horrible decade. And by the end of the 70s, we had interest rates of 21% in order to save the dollar. And there was stagflation. And Jimmy Carter got run out of town. And Reagan came in. And there was a lot of excitement during that time. But it was a lousy economic decade. Then that ushered in the age of fiat currency. I guess the most amazing thing is our economy is very, very fragile, and we have horrendous distortion, horrendous malinvestment. And I say a lot of inflation, and we're still fixing the price of money. So we're in a bigger mess than ever. But still, when you think about it, it's lasted longer than a lot of people expected. And it just seems like trust lasts a long time, because eventually, the trusting currency, trusting government, the trusting your military can convey some support for a currency. The amazing thing is that there's been a lot of lingering trust. Mises always said that you had to get money out of the marketplace, had to be a commodity, you had to place trust in it so that people know what it is. And you can't just originate money out of thin air and say, okay, we're going to print money and that's it. But it always remembers that it was a sound currency. So that has existed, but the elimination of it wasn't as fast as some of us might have expected. But my belief is, and my understanding is, the longer you delay the correction and the admission that it's a false system, the worse the conditions get for correction, the bigger the bubble. So they've been able to patch this together and keep blowing up the bubble. Even in these last 6 years or, 5 years or so, there's been a tremendous amount of inflation. Just think of QE. And yet the world is still hoping and praying that they can maintain this dollar. But boy, we are entering a new phase now, because there's every reason in the world for other countries to start rejecting us as a nation and as a friend and an ally and a trading partner. So my guess is that we'll see one day in the not too distant future an announcement, and it will be an announcement from the market. It'll be much greater than the announcement Nixon made on August 15th, 1971.
You were right that the momentum or trust in the dollar at the time has provided sustenance for the dollar standard for decades longer than perhaps it should have. But Dr. Paul, for those of us that keep an eye on these things, the breakdown of the dollar standard has been going on for some time, but it seems that it has really picked up speed lately.
Yes, it is. And, it's insidious, because you can make the argument that the dollar's been going down since the inception of the Federal Reserve. At that time, a dollar was 1/20th of an ounce of gold. In essence, gold was $20 per ounce, but now it's 1/1300. So the devaluation in terms of gold, which is the best long-term measurement, probably 98, maybe closer to 99% of that original dollar has been destroyed. And because it didn't happen all at one time, prices and people and mental status, it keeps adjusting. But the one thing, and what you're suggesting, is that if you're seeing it speeding up, and if that's actually the case, that's traditionally what happens at the end. You can have a devaluation of the currency. It can be insidious. It can be long-term. And there are so many variables involved in why there might be more trust than others. We certainly got away with maintaining a lot of wealth in World War II, where everybody else's was wiped out. But if you look at monetary history, even including our history, when there was rampant inflation and devaluation, both in our revolution and a lot of chaos in the Civil War, the end stages go rather rapidly. And if we just think of Mexico and Central America and South America, they've gone through this. Zimbabwe, we don't hear about Zimbabwe anymore now, but they didn't have inflation 1 week and it was over. They had insidious inflation, slow inflation. Everybody hoping they could save the Zimbabwe dollar. And then all of a sudden, total rejection. That's when everybody read about it. But, it lasted a certain period of time. But the big question is, what do you do after that? And I think we will have that. And I think there probably will always still be a dollar. But I'll tell you what, they're going to have to change policy and they're going to have to restore trust. That's no easy task in this day and age, because there's an attitude now that we don't place much trust in our government. for the most part, that is a very good attitude, because it's no reason to trust our government in dealing with foreign affairs, with dealing with our privacy and our civil liberties. And there's no reason to trust our government in managing our economy and our money. So the big question is what will the reforms look like? And obviously, many of us have been working for a lot of years, as you have, Charles, to try to educate people to what is necessary. The information is out there. It's not like we're living in ignorance. I think, just take the time since Adam Smith. Oh, look at the advancement and the understanding of economics and personal liberty. I mean, Adam Smith was a great, great economist, but he still had some fallacies in there that the Austrians have corrected. So there's every reason in the world for us to move on to a much better system. I don't like it when people say, oh, Ron Paul, you don't even want to go back to before 1971. You want to go all the way back to the 19th century. And I don't particularly like that. If you're going back to a sound truth, that's okay. But I would like to think that we have enough information now that we can move forward to a better understanding of money and a better understanding of how the marketplace works. And we should be thankful that it's been well documented by the many, many Austrian economists like Mises and Hayek and Rothbard and many others.
Well, it's an interesting anecdote, your memory of the stock market surging the day following the announcement in 1971 and the embrace that it got from the National Chamber of Commerce and so on and so forth. I wonder how long, if you have any impression of how long that warm embrace for Nixon's policy lasted when the absolute disastrous effects of his wage and price controls became apparent in store shelves and merchants and businessmen unable to raise their prices to cover the costs of inventory and so on.
Well, I'll tell you what, that was impressive to me, because although I was in medical practice, I had a few other business things going on. And matter of fact, I remember very clearly I was building a barn on a farm, and I was just buying of lumber. And the shortages didn't take a week or two or three. You didn't use up what you had, or gasoline prices. You didn't use up what was in the pump. Instantaneously, prices couldn't move. So you had shortages, absolute shortages. And then it wasn't long after that you had black markets. And, if you talk to economists ever since then, even though they won't look at this in a principled way, oh, nobody's for wage and price controls. But in some ways, they're always imposing wage and price controls. They have minimum wages. They have controls here and hiring practices. And then they fix the price of money, which is one half of every transaction we have. So they're still in the wage and price control mode. But it was instantaneous. So people got angry and upset. So they didn't last the whole decade. They did enough damage, and I imagine they started weaning off the wage and price controls. I remember, I think by 73 or so, they took off controls on everything except doctor's fees. So you weren't allowed to do anything. But I remember just buying paper for my copy machine, which always had to be a special paper back then. They would come by, and then when there was a hint that this was coming, they say, oh, the prices are going to go up, after they remove the wage and price control. Prices are going up. And we'd buy way in advance. The psychology was just crazy. But by the end of the decade, people had it, and they knew there was something wrong. And although we didn't change everything that I would have liked to change, at least psychologically and monetarily, things were changed. At the end of the decade under Volcker, which changes monetary policy, and the atmosphere psychologically changed under Reagan, and he deregulated the energy prices, and energy prices came down. So there was an improvement, but it was also planting the continued seeds of intervention. So I would think that the next round of need to reform might be so great that maybe we'll wise up and really reform and decide that freedom works better than all this government planning.
It is to be hoped for, but sometimes the memories of these debacles like the 1971 one don't last more than a generation or so. Dr. Paul, thank you for another informative conversation and podcast. And thank you for listening and telling your friends about our weekly podcast. I'm Charles Wade. We'll be right back.